Welcome one and all once again to Duo World in episode 98. We had a very quiet-ish news week, so it will be a short show, I imagine. But before we get there, let's introduce our panel this week. We have Daniel.
Hello.
Who is not coming to us from his cell phone.
Nope.
And we have Chad.
I don't want to be alive right now.
Who is surprisingly enough hungover. It would probably be a shorter episode if we counted the number of times Chad came on the show where he wasn't hungover or drunk.
See, when you say it like that, it paints a really negative picture, man.
Okay, so do you want to paint a positive picture?
I do specialize in fiction, so I suppose I probably could do so.
But that would be stretching the truth big time.
I'm not firing on all cylinders this morning. I'll do it some other time.
Okay, just for the record, it's not morning either. It's, what, 3:15 for you? So it's mid-afternoon.
Semantics, bro. Semantics.
I'm just saying that it's mid-afternoon for you and you're still hungover as hell. So we're just putting that out there. But this is...
YOLO!
Oh, God. But this isn't about Chad's drinking problems or anything of the sort. We're here to talk video games. And as always, there's a ton of new and interesting and exciting video games to talk about, which I assume none of us have been saying.
I haven't played any new games, but I've played a couple of old games that are new to me.
Okay.
You should talk about them.
Yeah. The first one is Sleeping Dogs, and it's not because... I got it in the Christmas sale on Steam because Valve screwed up and it was like £2.50 and I was like, yeah, I'm taking that. And then I bought a couple of the only DLC packs that actually had any content and weren't just stupid skins about a week ago. So I figured I should play it at some point. And it's I get very mixed reactions. There are times where I'll play it and I'll be really enjoying it. I'll be like, this game is great. And there'll be times where I play it and I'm like, this game is garbage, or I hate it. And it's very strange, because the only unique thing about the game, well, compared to games of its ilk, is the combat system. So basically they just took the combat system out of Arkham Asylum, Arkham City, and put it in a GTA game and set it in Hong Kong. But it's kind of... I think it's designed this way, but it doesn't work very well, in the sense that there'll be people that you'll fight against, and there'll be people, like, somehow you've got to discern whether they're people you can grapple or not, and it's kind of hard to do that. Well, it's actually impossible, because you look at somebody, and it's like, how do I know whether I can grapple him or not? So, you basically, whether you know is when you try to grapple them, if they counter you, okay, I won't grapple him ever again. But, and then... what happens is the AI tends to block a lot, and once the AI starts blocking, you can't really do anything, especially if it's somebody who you can't grapple. Because then if he blocks and you can't grapple him, there is no way. You've got to wait until he's sort of put himself in a position where he's vulnerable, which is really annoying. And it seems like there's like this kind of wipeout mechanic where if you're doing a combo, but you don't finish it properly, where he just sort of stands there and does this sort of pose, and you can literally do nothing while he's doing that. You can mash buttons and nothing will happen. And it's just like, there's a guy with a knife there and he's swinging at you. Can you do something, please? And the amount of times I've died because of that is very annoying. And the way it handles combos is not great. So you can fluff a combo and... just like, I pushed the buttons in the correct order, in the correct way, so why did you fuck up? So, but when the combat system works, it's really cool, and, you know, the atmosphere in the game is great, I love it. Just when the combat system doesn't work, it's really frustrating. But otherwise, it was a good purchase for £2.50.
Well, I mean, there's very few games that aren't a good purchase for £2.50.
Yeah.
I mean, the only thing I've played free games that I've had issues with, but Yeah, I mean, and Sleeping Dogs was a lot of people's, it was up there for Game of the Year contendership. It does sound odd that for something that kind of takes the combat from the Arkham City, Arkham Asylum games, that it doesn't seem to, because, I mean, that's the bread and butter of those games. As much as I have Batman yeah. without that combat system, that's
it's why you play it.
Yeah.
And it's very strange how it messes it up, and then what happens is the game sort of, it says, there is a gunfighting, but it doesn't happen very often, and it's a bit janky when you use guns. So you've got a combat system that works when it wants to, and you've got a gunfighting system. You've got a gun that doesn't. It's okay, but you've got to sort of deal with its quirks. Like all the guns are really inaccurate, so obviously to discourage you from using them. And it's that's kind of annoying when you're given you get these sort of things called drug busts, where you go and you clear out a group of enemies that could vary in size, and then you've got to hack a camera. When the group of enemies has guns, that's when the game just starts sort of, it's like, oh, I wish I didn't have to do this, because the gun fighting is not great. And it has, there are like closets that people come out of, and you go in them, and it's like, this is just a dead end, how do the people come out of here? It's very strange. Yeah, when Sleeping Dogs wants to work, it's very good, and it's very atmospheric. But when it doesn't, it's very frustrating. The other game I played was Sonic Generations, and as somebody who has, and not actually, well, I've played Sonic 1 and 2, and I've played Sonic Adventure 2, but I haven't done too much in them to sort of go, yeah, I'm a Sonic fan, or yeah, I actually like Sonic games. So this was kind of my first Sonic game, and I'm very divided on it. Like, it seems like what Sega did is, when, like, this is completely against the point of the game, but the classic Sonic levels that they remade are great, but unless you're playing the modern Sonic versions, and then they're not so good. And the modern Sonic levels, when you're playing them as modern Sonic, they're great, but not when you're playing the classic Sonic versions.
And which I mean, kind of makes sense, because
but like they changed the levels. Like, it's not even like they changed. They try and use the same kind of design. It's just the same sort of backdrop and same music and same themes.
Yeah.
So, and the worst one, I think, the worst classic Sonic level is City Escape. I hate the whole fact that the truck comes in and just destroys the environment if you're not quick enough.
Oh, City Escape has been a shitty Sonic level since it existed initially.
Well, I haven't...
It has amazing music, though.
I don't have any problems with City Escape and Modern Sonic City Escape. Just the fact that in the classic Sonic version of it, the truck comes and actually destroys the environment if you're not fast enough. And classic Sonic wasn't about being fast. It was about sort of traversing the environment very smoothly, and you go fast sometimes and slow others.
And that's why, I think that's why it works the way it works, where like you said, like a lot of this stuff where it's 2D Sonic, it works for the games that were 2D.
Yeah.
And it's because they were designed around that way, because like you said, you know, especially with the move to 3D, a lot of it was like, go fast as you can, and that doesn't really necessarily work in 2D.
The game is very buggy. It's very, when you play as Modern Sonic, sometimes it goes into a 2D transition, which is okay, you know, they're bearable sometimes. And there was one time where it curved, sort of, you go around a curve and it goes back into 3D as you go around the curve. What happened was, is Sonic was running in 2D still, and the game was trying to go in 3D, so the game and the character were operating on different planes, and nothing was happening, and it's like, what is going on? I had to restart the level.
Well, I mean, you can't have a Sonic game without bugs. They were just trying to stick with authenticity.
So, like, I'm very divided. Like, the modern Sonic, I wish I could progress without having to do the classic Sonic versions of modern Sonic levels, and vice versa, but I can't. So
I'm surprised you didn't complain, because I don't mind that so much. My biggest beef with the game, and I still enjoy it overall, is the fact that not only do you have to do the classic and the modern Sonic stuff, but you're not required to do all of them, but you're still required to do like the sub challenges as well.
I don't mind them, because they're over fairly quickly.
They are. It's just really, it's an odd design decision forcing you to do that. Yeah. You know, they're kind of like, oh, if you want, but it's not, no, you have to do like five of these to continue to open up the boss battle or something like that.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
It could have been, like, it's, I can see why people really like it, but I think that for it to sort of, Sega really need to pay more care and attention to the levels that don't belong to the Sonics, if that makes any sense. So they sort of decided to, it was kind of an afterthought, and they didn't really design the levels that well, unfortunately. If they had designed the levels better, then I would actually say it was a great game, but I can't, because half of the game is just kind of annoying to me, so I don't know. Hopefully they manage to make a good Sonic game sometime in the future that I can actually sort of properly enjoy. But until then, I'm not touching Sonic 4.
Oh, that's just so different.
That game even looks bad.
I've heard better things about Episode 2, but I kind of got burnt out after Episode 1, so...
Yeah.
What about you, Chad? Have you been playing anything new recently? Is he even still with us?
What?
I'm just assuming you checked out for today.
What did you say about...
I'm asking if you've played anything new this week.
I played a bunch of things new this week, actually. So suck on that.
Well, I wasn't making fun of you for that. I'm making fun of the fact that you're pretty much checked out of this conversation.
Yeah, well, what are you going to do, right?
Not drink as much?
Oh, now you're just being silly. things that I've played. I played Antichamber. That game's... It's a puzzle game. I'll explain it in case people don't know what it is, because not many people have heard of it.
Well, I only found out yesterday what it was, so...
It's kind of Echochrome-esque in that it's very dependent upon your perception of whatever world you happen to be in, but it's also kind of Portal-esque in that you get a gun that helps you solve puzzles. And it's basically just, it's based on like non-Euclidean geometry, so it's more Escher than it is Euclid, which maybe that means something to people and maybe it doesn't. it's very difficult. I am not a huge fan of how hard it makes me think. But it's not cheap. It's like, unlike those old adventure games when it would be like, oh, I had to combine the toilet paper roll with the fan. How did I not think of that? Like, every solution here makes sense. It feels like, yeah, fuck, I should have seen that.
That's the thing that I saw is that it's very easy to overthink the puzzles, and if you're overthinking the puzzles, you're doing it wrong, and you need to stop, and you need to sort of break down what it is you're thinking. And
yeah,
think,
exactly.
Yeah.
You get to Sherlock Holmes it.
The thing I have with Antichamber is I was going to buy it, and then I saw it was about a 20-minute video on it. I was like, well, I've ruined the first 20 minutes of the game, so what I'm going to do is I'm going to wait, because Antichamber is about playing it all through and getting it all and not having it walk through for you. So I'm going to wait a few months, and then perhaps I would have forgotten the first few puzzles, and then I'll buy it.
Yeah, that's a good way to go about it, I would say.
Because it's very easy to ruin that game for yourself.
Yeah.
But I saw it and I was like, this game, like, it's got some incredible ideas, and I actually give the guy who did that, there's only about three guys that made it, I have to give them props for making a game that makes sense but at the same time doesn't.
Yeah, it's quite genius. I would definitely recommend people give it a shot. It's only, I think it's like 25% off too, so it's fairly cheap. I've been playing a lot of this Capcom character action game as well.
Are you not going to refer to it by its proper name?
It's not that. It's the thing. And that is critical. I listened to the reviews before I bought it because obviously there was a lot of like love or hate going on. So basically, where were you going with that?
No, I was gonna say it seems like a lot of people were saying like this is a good action game. It's just not a good DMC game. Did we lose him?
Yeah, I think so.
I lost my train of thought. Give me a minute.
Start from the beginning. You haven't really said much yet.
it's important that I call it that Capcom character action game because you go into that game expecting things. When someone says Devil May Cry, there are images that come to your head. And if you go in expecting those things, you're going to be really disappointed because the musical choices are not classical DMC. The level design is not classical DMC. The battle system is not classical DMC.
Chaz, just a thought here, right? If they wanted it to be like classical DMC, don't you think they wouldn't have rebooted it?
Exactly. But I'm saying people need to realize that going in.
All right.
Because there are a lot of people that don't. Like, there are a lot of people that expect exactly what they've gotten before. And I think that that's the wrong way to go into it.
Well, because otherwise it would be called Devil May Cry and not DMC, so...
Exactly. So I understand, like, a bit of the rage coming out of that, because... Like, sure, it's been the fans of the series for all these years who have helped it grow and sustained it, and they feel kind of betrayed, whatever, whatever. I guess I can kind of get down with that. But the way I went into this game was, like, it's its own thing. I'm not expecting anything in particular out of it. And I really, 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 really like it. As a character action game, I think it's fantastic. I think the combat is different, but it's also very good. The weapons are some of the best in the series, I think, to be honest. It's very, 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 very stylish. And my only real complaint is that it's really easy to cheese the rating system. Like, there's...
How so?
There's one weapon where you basically hold down the triangle button and then you get triple S rank. Like, that's how the weapon works. And so in that regard, it takes some of the difficulty out of, like, achieving a really high rank. But other than that, I'm really, really pleased with it, surprisingly, because I didn't expect... Like I say, I expected nothing. I could get into the writing, which is terrible. It's some of the worst writing I've ever seen.
At times it's very juvenile.
It is, extremely.
Maybe on purpose, but like, from what, because I've watched my roommate play it, and at the start with that cutscene, it makes the game out to be like very tongue in cheek, and then it ends up not being tongue in cheek.
Exactly.
Really.
At the beginning, I was really excited because that whole opening level is like, yeah, this is classic Dante. I can see this being pretty rad. And then it moves away from the tongue-in-cheek aspects and starts taking itself seriously. And that is not anything that should ever be taking itself seriously. Holy shit. Dante, every word that comes out of his mouth is makes me cringe. Like, he's so childish.
Yeah, but do they play it up as something like that, or is it, like, one of the things that turned me off, not, you know, if it's DMC or not, was that during the demo when they had that scene with the whole, F you, and I'm like, yeah, you know, this isn't really funny.
That's not actually a real cutscene, that's just a poorly cut together video.
Okay. But I thought that was the boss battle.
It is, but he says fuck you, like, twice, and then they just took it and... spliced it together. Nonetheless, that's two times too many.
It didn't seem like it added anything. It just like,
and that's my biggest problem with this. The story is utterly forgettable. It's not anything you ever kind of want to deal with. Like, I'm watching all the cutscenes the first time I play through it. I'm about probably two-thirds of the way through the game right now. But I'm not going to watch the cutscenes ever again after I beat it. Like, but that's not why you come to these games. You play through the 10-hour story once, and then the next 150 hours are spent trying to beat your high scores and trying to triple S rank everything on the highest difficulty. Like, these are... If I was going to compare it to one thing, it would be like bullet hell shooters. It's that same kind of chasing high scores, trying to outdo yourself, like that same mentality that kind of goes into it. And, I mean, the combat makes it so that's something I want to do. Like, I'm going to keep coming to back to this game, even despite the lack of a lock-on and the ways they've kind of modified it from other games. It's, I'd say, better. It's better in a lot of ways. There are people who complain there are certain enemies where you have basically angel weapons and demon weapons that are triggered by holding down either the left or right trigger. And some enemies are only affected by angel weapons, and some are only affected by demon weapons. And some people don't like that it constrains you in that way, where you have to use a particular weapon against a particular enemy. But I think it adds some depth and strategy to the combat that kind of hasn't been there before. So I think the combat's actually gotten deeper in a lot of ways. So,
but that's the whole point of limiting it, is to make it so it's deeper and you have to be more strategic about it.
Exactly. And in that regard, it was a success, I think. It's gorgeous. Oh, my God.
Yeah, it looks great.
Ultra settings fucking is mind-blowingly amazing looking. It's got probably, I'm just going to go ahead and say it now, it's got the best soundtrack out of any game that's going to come out this year.
It's so weird, because, I mean, from all you're saying, it sounds like you had a really good experience with it. Your problem just happens to be the name.
No, that's not. I'm saying that's not even a problem I have with it, because I didn't bring that baggage in, though.
Oh,
it's
so,
a problem that everybody else has with it.
Yeah, because, like, it seems like it's a really well-thought-out action game.
It really is, and I honestly feel bad for the people who are going to say, oh, they changed Dante's hair color, it's not the same thing, I'm not going to play this game. Because it's a really awesome character action game. And unfortunately, it's just got a lot of baggage that comes along with it. I mean, because I don't know if you've been reading reviews for it or not, but if you take a look at the comments section, it is gnarly. There's a lot of hate out there from that game, or for that game, from people who haven't even played it yet, just based on the ways that it differs from past installments in the series.
So there's a lot of hate on the internet for something.
Yeah.
Curious.
So I say everyone should definitely play it if you like character action games, but don't go into it expecting, like, the typical DMC tropes, because they're not there, and it's honestly better for it in a lot of ways. So there's
that. Have you been playing anything else?
I think DMC and Antichamber are about it. Well, I mean StarCraft, but whatever. That's that.
Okay. I have been really just awful. I've been playing Happy Wars, which
is that free to play
Xbox
game.
Yeah. Because everybody kept on mentioning it. I had no idea what it was, and I downloaded it. And one, I didn't know it was a free to play game going in. I thought it was a demo or something, or beta. So they don't really tell, like, basically how it's broken up is that you get lucky cards and lucky coins or something stupid like that, and the lucky coins you earn throughout the game, you earn it in, you know, when it, for doing stuff, and that you can buy weapons and upgrades. The lucky cards you can only get by buying, or you get 40 free ones when the game starts, and they don't tell you that you don't get those, so I ended up spending mine without knowing that you don't replenish them, or there's no way to earn them in the game without actually paying for them, which I think is, I understand it's a free-to-play model, but my thing with free-to-play model has always been that it should be a grind versus cheat, you know, like kind of just cheating and not doing it, and not like, oh, you can't do this without paying us.
Also, you need to be very clear on, this is what you pay for, you know, if you want to use this, just be aware that you have to pay to get more.
Yeah, they don't really... I mean, maybe I just wasn't reading enough, but they didn't really make that clear. The other thing I have issues with, and again, you know, I understand why to a degree, is that you, in order to unlock the single-player component, like, you have one stage in a single-player that's open at the start. In order to unlock the rest of them, you have to level up in multiplayer to a certain level, so to open up level 2, you have to reach level 6 in the multiplayer game. And I don't like that. I don't like that you're kind of forced to go through multiplayer to play through single player, especially if you want to kind of learn the basics and gain equipment. It seems kind of cheap that they're saying, like, no, you're going to have to hear them. You know, because usually it's, you would think it's the other way around, that you do single player to get better for multiplayer and extend the campaign, and not necessarily play multiplayer to unlock stuff in, to unlock the single player mode. Other than that, it's a very basic team... It's a team-based strategy game. It's basically all capture the points. There's, depending on the stage, there's anywhere from, like, there are, you all have a home base, and then there's usually anywhere between 1 to 5 bases on the stage that you can capture. And then, you know, like, when you capture them, they become respawn points, so that, you know, like, you kind of keep on pushing forward and forward.
It sounds like Fat Princess.
It does. It's a very shallow set, Frat Princess, then. Because it's only 3 classes. You can only be a mage, a cleric, or a knight. So basically, you can be long range, short range, or backup.
Yeah.
And there's not a lot of variety in the weapons to kind of keep it simple. And the fact that, again, you have to go through multiplayer. I haven't played it enough to, like, there's some form of evolution as far as, like, stats and stuff goes, but again, it doesn't seem like a very complex game. It doesn't seem like there's a lot to it. It just seems like something you kind of do in between games. I'm starting to notice, and maybe it's just me, a lot of Xbox Live titles just kind of, they use the same art style now, and they don't seem anything special.
Yeah.
So that's another interesting thing. Like, at the start of this generation, it would be a nice looking game. Now it's just like, I've seen this before. I don't know what to say. It's a free game, and it's worth checking out. I'm going to see if I can play more with my friends. The other thing is, it seems to have a really shaky netcode. So, like, that's the other thing. Is, like, because it forces you to play multiplayer, and the fact that multiplayer doesn't always work... is another thing that just kind of pisses me off. So, there's that. I think that's it for me. I probably played some other stuff this week that I wasn't paying attention to, or a demo, and I just kind of forgot, but who knows. On to news, and it's not a very news-heavy week, but we'll start off, because we don't usually do this, but because Sony announced that they're going to showcase the future on February 20th, just 3 weeks away. I figured we might as well touch on this stuff, because apparently, once Sony said stuff, everybody just kind of opened their floodgates and spoke to all their contacts in the industry. And we're running out about the system.
I wouldn't be surprised if this was just... I wouldn't be surprised if this is just Sony announcing that they're sort of rebranding PlayStation... in preparation for the PS4. Like, they're not going to say that, but it will be a rebrand. There won't be any of this, the typical sort of, like, robot PlayStation thing that happens at the end of every advert. You know, they'll get rid of that and change it.
See, I don't see them doing this, like, you know, this huge thing. They're announcing, they're calling people into New York City for this big event. I don't see them doing that 3 weeks in advance to rebrand the PlayStation.
I don't think it will be PS4. Not yet.
I do. I mean, especially if they're coming out the end of this year, like everybody seems to be saying, is I think it needs to be PS4.
Well, in that case, what happened to, we'll let Microsoft go first?
Yeah, I think that was just them, you know, they probably thought Microsoft was planning something in January, which kind of makes sense with CES. Because, like, if they're coming out this year, I just think that the further and further we get into the year, the harder it's going to be to kind of just have, like, this four-month turnaround.
Yeah.
Granted, the internet helps with that, and you get word of mouth spread much more quickly. But I think, you know, like, they want... you kind of want some type of feedback. If you review it at E3 and then it's out in 4 months, that's not a lot of time for you to kind of gauge critical reception and try to change stuff that needs to be changed or whatever. And, you know, it's also, and they probably don't want to repeat what happened with the PlayStation Vita, where that was kind of, I mean, I guess that on the same schedule, Vita was revealed in like January of that year, and the more and more we heard about it and saw of it, the more and more it kind of, the hype kind of decreased massively going into the launch, where there was like really nothing left by the time we got to the launch. You know, the thing that stands out to me the most, because I, you know, I've said this with the 3DS, I've said this with the Vita, I've said this with the Wii U, specs don't mean anything to me. I don't understand them. but it seems like Sony is at least modifying or advancing the DualShock design in some fashion.
And I think that that's a good thing. I don't, people are like, oh no, how dare they touch it, don't fix something that isn't broken. But, like, at the very least, the DualShock controllers have always felt really flimsy.
Yeah.
And they haven't had the best analog sticks either. No, they don't. They need triggers. I don't care what anyone says. The DualShock does not have triggers.
And I think part of the reason why people were always kind of, you know, impressed with the DualShock and why was because up until this generation was that, you know, the Dreamcast only had one analog stick. Nintendo does its own thing with controllers.
There's no competition.
Yeah, there was, and then the Xbox 360 controller came out, and everybody's like, okay, this is a much better design. You know, it's aesthetically more pleasing, it fits in your hand better, and the button layouts work.
And at the very least, the 360 controllers feel solid in your hand.
Yeah, so I think we just kind of reached the point where, like, it wasn't the fact that everybody was always happy with the PlayStation controller, it was
just
the
best thing
that
they had.
Yeah, nobody offered an alternative, even though, you know, personally speaking, I prefer the GameCube controller. I still prefer the focus on one giant A button. It's a really interesting design, but yeah, it seems like they aren't going with a touch screen, but a touch pad, which I think will be...
Honestly, I would prefer that. Like, I think out of all of the sort of input devices on the Vita, I prefer the touchpad on the back, because you can sort of use it and you can see the effects instantly, and it doesn't need to be 100% accurate.
See, that's kind of my thing. It's like, it seems like it's going to be like the 6-axis all over again, where it's just kind of something there.
But that's the thing though, is like, you can put these input devices on your controller, but it doesn't mean people are going to use them properly.
No, it doesn't, but I mean, this is just kind of like, I mean, you know, say what you will about Nintendo and their lack of vision or their, you know, troubles or their rules, at least when they come up with something, they go 100% behind it.
Yeah, and they show everyone how to use it properly, even if nobody pays attention.
Yeah. This just seems like, oh, you know, it'd be cool if we had it. Do you use it, if not use it. What I do find more intriguing, and I can kind of see this going the same way with the next Xbox, is the rumors of it having a share button, which allows you to share in-game screenshots and roughly the last 15 minutes of gameplay in video format.
That's kind of a necessity, though. Because, I mean, look at Steam. Steam has changed quite dramatically in the last few months from something that you just launch, you know, something that's just there to organize your games and update them, to the thing where you can go and view your friends' screenshots, and the thing where you go and download mods, and, you know, it's become, and there was a video released this week actually, and Gabe was saying that, you know, Steam's becoming all about user generated content as well as the games that they get generated in or generated for. So that makes complete sense, and there's no reason why you can't have it. It's a screenshot function. It's not going to be a massive performance hit. So, you know, at the very least,
it's something that I've wanted in
console games forever.
Well, I mean, I was going to say, and I mean, I think the Vita does something like that, but you have to. There's a button configuration for that, and the Wii U does it on a system level.
Yeah.
So that's positive. So at least they have that. The video stuff I think is interesting, especially being that a lot of people are in these LLPs now.
Yeah.
So that will be a huge, you know, barrier for people, and, you know, because you don't have the capture device and all this other stuff. Is it, you know, if it does it naturally and stuff like that, that would be cool. I'm curious to see how they integrate it beyond just, like, sharing. Like, you know, the big thing with screenshot sharing on the Wii U is the Miiverse and sharing it with fellow gamers and having people comment on it and, you know, asking questions. Like, is it just going to be like, oh, you can share this to Twitter and Facebook, or is Sony going to integrate it on the OS level as well?
They would have to implement some kind of social network to go with it, because what is a screenshot if you've got nowhere to put it?
Well, that's
what it would be, because the way Steam works is you can link up your Facebook, for example, and then you post the screenshot to Steam, and Steam shares the page that the screenshot is on to Facebook. So that's the way I would imagine it happening on the next PlayStation.
That's what I'm saying, though, but because you can do it like an Instagram where, like, you take a screenshot and you post it to, you can attach your Facebook, you can attach your Twitter, you can attach your Instagram, and it posts there. Or is it going to be something that's like, we'll have a PlayStation blog-esque thing on the OS, like a home thing?
No, I think it'll be like that. Because if you link somebody to it, it's then an advert for, this is what the PlayStation does.
Yeah, that's why I'm curious to see how they do it. I think it's a great idea. But they have to go the whole way and not just like, oh, okay, this is here. You can post these videos to YouTube or something like that. They need to be like, oh, this is on the PlayStation wall or something like that. And, you know, and it's going to be more impressive down the line when they have a lot of games like Little Big Planet where you share content and, you know, posting that stuff and like, oh, here's a little video of my stage if you want to check it out or something along those lines. So, yeah. We'll have more on this, hopefully, if it is the PlayStation 4, which I assume it is, or Orbis, or whatever you want to call it, in 3 weeks when they roll out this huge event in New York City. Speaking of later this year and huge events, GTA 5 was... I don't want to use the word delayed, because technically we didn't have a release date for it.
Technically they did say it was Q2.
Yeah, we had a release window for it, but not a release date. So, I mean, it's pushed back I think it's a better term.
Yeah.
Because saying delayed, again, implies that there was a release date, which we never had. And, Nick, they said that in their statement, that we're sorry we missed what we originally announced. But, again, it still didn't have a firm release date. But now it does, September 17th, which sucks for Killzone.
That's a pretty big delay as well.
Yeah, 4 months. And my thing with this is, I think it does not bode well for Microsoft and Sony. This is a cross-generational title. Because if you go into the fall of this year and you have Madden, you have GTA, you have Call of Duty 10, you have Assassin's Creed 3.2 or whatever they want to call it, on the current gen systems, like, there's going to be very little reason for people to upgrade when
even if it is on the next gen systems as well, I wouldn't buy a new next gen system because I've got GTA on the current gen.
But and
people were saying that, you know, like, they wouldn't be surprised if there was no backwards compatibility. If there is no backwards compatibility in the next generation, then there's even less reason to buy a next generation console, because buy GTA 5 and it's only on the current generation.
Yeah, and I hope Microsoft and Sony aren't that stupid, especially Microsoft, because one of their strongest assets is Xbox Live, and I feel like I think if they don't do backwards compatibility, I think their thinking is, oh, we'll just force people to upgrade, when what most likely is going to happen is people aren't going to upgrade until you have those games that people want.
Yeah.
And it's the same thing with why, you know, people don't buy Call of Duty on the Wii U. It's like, if I have my friends who play Call of Duty on the 360 and the PS3, and I can't play with them if they get the next system, I'm going to wait until we all decide to upgrade, and there's a Call of Duty exclusive for that, or, you know, next-gen systems, and not, oh, I can play Call of Duty 10 or Modern Warfare 4, whatever you want to call it, on my Xbox 360. I can play Assassin's Creed on my 360. I can play GTA 5 on my 360. And the other problem with that is, like, even if they are in the next-gen systems, that's cannibalizing a lot of launch sales, because you have four major franchises hidden within 2 months.
Yeah.
So I feel sorry for third parties in general, even if we didn't have two systems launching, because you're kind of like, you know, usually what you did is you kind of got out of the way of Call of Duty by going early in the, you know, you went in October, you went at the end of September. Now GTA's there, and at the end of the road is Call of Duty. So
not to mention is GTA, you know, it was easy for everybody to stay away from GTA before because it was spring. Nobody releases anything in the spring, really.
Yeah. So it's going to be an interesting thing to shake up. Maybe it's a cross-generational game, and if I'm Microsoft and Sony, I'm begging Rockstar right now, like, you know, put it on there, give us something, you know. Maybe that's why it's today, so it's, you know, there's not a huge window between the two of them. But it's still going to be, like, when, again, you have 140 million people who own these two systems.
And I bet you we won't get PC, there won't be a PC version until 2014.
Eh, who knows? Nobody counts.
They delay the game by 4 months, and they still don't get a PC version out on release date. That's Rockstar.
What can you do? Speaking of release dates and not doing well, Junction Point, the makers of Epic Mickey and Epic Mickey 2, have closed down for business this week. After Epic Mickey 2 sold, I think it's 529,000 copies in the first 2 months in the States, and this is across, I think, four different platforms, not counting the 3DS version, which I think pushed it up to, like, 697,000. So, yeah, I mean, are you folks going to shed a tear for Junction Point?
Well, the Epic Mickey games weren't particularly great in anyway, and it seems like it sounds like that they didn't.
Okay, so I got cut off where you were saying something about the first two Epic Mickey games weren't that good.
Yeah, the first Epic Mickey game, apparently they didn't learn and fix the problems with it. They just made another Epic Mickey game with the same problems. So,
from what I understand, it's even worse.
Yeah,
which I actually kind of understand because. Like one of the reasons why Epic Mickey 1 wasn't, I mean, it was a train wreck, but they focused on one system. Now they spread it out to four different systems, and it wasn't all done by Junction Point. And they had a cast of, like, they had a studio of, what, 600 people?
Jesus.
Yeah,
I don't think anyone's surprised at this news, to be honest.
No, it's the latest in the long line of them, and it just kind of shows that we've had a lot of people with these inflated budgets for games that really don't deserve it. Like, there's no reason you should have greenlit Epic Mickey 2 to increase its production cost when the first one, while it sold well the first month, and then completely dropped off the map.
Yeah.
And yeah, it seemed like they rushed it out to get it out for this holiday season, and it just didn't work out in their end, and they gave up a lot of good fortune that they had with it. And, you know, it's not surprising that, because most of their studios before Epic Mickey 1 came out, so this is just them finishing the job.
But now Disney only have Infinity to worry about, so.
Yeah. Yeah, it's going to be a cash cow for them. Yeah. They've already announced that we can expect the sequels or the updates or whatever they want to call it. So, yay.
Do you need one studio to do that?
You can have multiple studios dedicated to one franchise. You got Call of Duty and Assassin's Creed. But, yeah. I don't remember if we touched on this last week or not, but Crytek Austin has, well, Crytek USA has kind of absorbed most of Vigil, so the Darksiders people are now working for Crytek, but they are not working on a Darksiders
game. I don't
game.
Understand Crytek, like, they seem to have, they have, like, 9 different studios, and it's like, what do you do with them? I know they make military sims with one of them, they make Crysis with the German one, they're doing Homefront 2 with the British one, it's like, what are you doing with the other ones?
Yeah, I think that just kind of, it seems like the same thing with Koch Media. It's like they seem to be collecting them, and I think a lot of people are just kind of gearing up for the transition into next gen, because, I mean, how much manpower to make games this gen, I assume what we're going to see more than likely next gen is we're going to see fewer big titles, but the big titles are going to be huge titles that take up a lot of manpower and man hours. So you're going to have a lot of studios working on like one or two major franchises.
And the thing is, though, is if we have a situation where that franchise doesn't do so well, that's even more people going down the drain. And, you know, and we have this problem where, you know, too many cooks spoil the broth. Look at how many studios Duke Nukem Forever went through. It was about six of them.
Yeah, and the problem is, it's not necessarily that too many studios. The problem is that a lot of people don't want to give up on these projects. So it's like, oh, we've already kind of did work into this, so let's just kind of stick with this basis, and you'll build on that, and then you build on that, and you'll build on that. You end up with a very... I mean, I think Resident Evil 6 is the example. It's like the prime example of that, where you have a bunch of games that feel disjointed and disconnected from each other. Like, it feels like three different games just kind of mashed up together. So, yeah. And the other thing is, like I mentioned, they don't have any intentions of picking up the Darksiders IP. So, Darksiders in the future won't be done by the original developers if anybody picks up the IP.
Which is a shame, because most of the time, franchises are best laid, best with their original developers.
Yeah, I mean,
sorry.
You also have to think about the fact that Vigil has made two Darksiders games, and they haven't really made money, so, like, is it worth putting them on the game again if it's not really shown to be beneficial to the franchise?
I don't know, because, like, if they were bad games, then I could probably understand, but then they weren't by any means.
No, but you also have to realize, like, you while you want probably critically acclaimed games, you also want games that sell well and actually make you a profit. I mean, maybe they could have saved Vigil Wholesale, maybe got rid of management, maybe there are people up top who don't know how to rein in costs and, you know, like...
And I think that I can't help but think that part of the reason, at the very least, why Darksiders didn't do so well was because of THQ. There must have been something that THQ was doing wrong, because you can't have that many franchises that get critical praise but don't sell well. So
yeah.
There's so many points where you can say, oh, it was this person, it was that person, that I guess we'll never know, and maybe splitting Vigil up from the franchise is a good idea, maybe it's not.
Yeah, it's one of those decisions we won't. We don't even know if Darksiders is going to return.
Yeah.
So we'll see. Finally, before we get to our question of the week or whatever, I guess, we have Nintendo's financial quarter earnings or whatever. They ended up making a profit for this past quarter, but at the cost of Wii U and 3DS sales. So they cut expectations across the board for all of those systems and software guidance, partially because they delayed pretty much every first-party title that was going out this first quarter. There was a bunch of other stuff they said. They're going to assist third parties in bringing over more 3DS games. We kind of started to see that with some of the more obscure Japanese titles, like Project X Zone coming over.
I'm super stoked about that, by the way.
Yeah, I am. They've mentioned that they have more third-party collaborations in the works, like they've done with Project X Zone, with Shin Megami Tensei, and Fire Emblem, with a bunch of other things that's just really weird and out there. Pokemon Conquest. So, yeah. It seems like, you know, things are better, but not getting much better for them, because they still expect to lose money overall for the year. And it seems like Iwata is putting himself on the line. He says
that may be sad. I love Mr. Iwata. I don't want Mr. Iwata to go.
I think everybody does.
And
I also think that he's, as far as I'm concerned, he's one of the most intelligent people in the industry. I love hearing him speak.
Yeah. Mr. Iwata, I mean, I don't think Iwata can blame himself for, you know, things that people aren't buying as video games as they were, you know, even 5 years ago, and, you know, and it's a shame because he since he came, like, joining, headed Nintendo, they've actually made real strides in becoming, you know, a very interactive company with their customers on Nintendo Direct, you know?
Yeah, and he's done a lot of good for the company, and, you know, at the end of the day, he still did lead them through their most profitable era. It just seems like, and, it, you know, like he, while they do have some things that they blame, he doesn't, it's nice to see that he's not blaming, you know, like he's not pointing the finger at this, and that. He's saying, like, you know, this falls on me, and if we don't return to profitability, I will think about stepping down as president next year. So we shall see what comes from that. I mean, sadly, it makes sense from a business standpoint that if you're not making profit, that, you know, something needs to be shaken up.
Yeah.
The problem is, as far as I know, whatever people recommend for Nintendo always seems to be like, be more like Sony and be more like Microsoft. And as far as profitability goes, those aren't the models to follow.
Nintendo doesn't need to be more like Sony and Microsoft, and Nintendo knows it. Nintendo, they're heading in the right direction. They're just not quite there yet.
But yeah, I'm happy that they seem to be recognizing a lot of their problems. A lot of, you know, like, instead of trying to force third party support over games, they seem to be going out and actively saying, like, okay, you can make this for us, or, you know, help it. And this serves two purposes. One, you get more exclusive games from third parties you're flipping the bill for. You get more content. You get more of the IPs out there. The other thing, though, is it also helps with third parties to get familiar with your architect, with your system, with your design. So that's good. What they need to do, though, is also focus on Western studios, because as far as I know, they haven't announced any of these collaborations with anybody in the States or Europe or anything like that yet.
Yeah.
And
maybe
it'll happen. You can throw 100 Japanese games on the system and they would be great to be exclusives, but at the end of the day, you're going to need something, you know, like you're going to need something like Call of Duty, you're going to need something like Assassin's Creed, something like Halo, you know, Resist, something of that nature on your system to kind of draw in that crowd. And, there have been some missed opportunities. Some people point to THQ. I think they should have partnered up with Eurocom, who had a lot of experience making first-person shooters on the Wii. Step in, like, maybe talk about Time Spinners or something like that. They need to do what they're doing with Bayonetta 2. They need to find a brand in the West that kind of languish.
They need to do what Capcom is doing. Because this is what Capcom's been doing lately.
Off the fans?
Well, no. Well, aside from that, I mean, like, you know, we've got a franchise that we want to sort of aim towards Western, you know, consumers, so let's get a Western developer to do it. Because they got Ninja Theory to do DMC, and they got the Spark Unlimited, or whoever they are, to do Lost Planet 3. So
yeah, the problem with that is Nintendo gets Western developers to do stuff, but they get them to do Nintendo games.
Yeah.
Next level games, Canadians, they're doing Luigi's Mansion. Luigi's Mansion looks like a Nintendo game. Monster Games does. The Pilot Wings Resorts, they do ExciteBot. It's like,
well, Retro Studios.
Retro Studio. Well, okay, Metroid Prime's a very Western game.
Yeah, but then we had Donkey Kong Country.
Returns, which is a very Nintendo game. End space. And I think their problem is, like, they've given Western Studios free reign. They've kind of not gotten there. You know, Eternal Darkness was well, but Silicon Knight ended up being a mess. Rare made good games, but Rare ended up being a headache. End Space didn't make great games.
Ever.
Yeah, Phil Studio. So, you know, they've tried it before in the past, and it just kind of hasn't worked out for them. And they don't want to buy up studios because you buy a brand doesn't mean you get the people who made it what it is.
Well, Microsoft know that.
Yeah, so, I mean, really what they should do, and I guess this is what they do, but it ends up being the same thing that they're doing anyhow. It's like they put people that they know and trust in positions of power to make Western games that are still Nintendo games.
Yeah.
What they need to do is find somebody in the West and just kind of, like, you know, like, they need to trust their people in the West to come up with something, to create a studio that's very Western focused. They need a Retro Junior. And there's a lot of talent in Austin, so they could just expand Retro, give them two teams. They have the entire division in Seattle with the NST, which doesn't really do anything. And they have a presence in Canada. Vancouver and Montreal have a very big gaming population as well. So they can work into that. Or, you know, again, you can take up the pieces of Silicon Knights and Like, it seems like Seika Knights is a good studio if you remove Dayak.
Yeah.
So, again, so yeah, you know, like, they need to put people in positions that they trust and trust them to make Western games that I can understand Nintendo interfering for because they still want it to be very Nintendo, but trust them to be, you know, like, it doesn't need to be Japanese eye or whatever. So, yeah, there's that. And we'll talk about more. I guess Microsoft and Sony should have their financial stuff sooner or later. Okay. We didn't do this last week, and this is kind of a mixture because I did this over the course of the week, but our question of the week, or two questions, was actually dealt with the longevity of franchises in gaming. Nathaniel answered this part of this, at least on Twitter, and I don't think Chad has, but the two questions I asked is, like, you know, It was a two part question, not related until I looked back on our account for the week, but what gives a franchise longevity? Why are some able to survive for decades and others die out in a single generation? And the second part of that is like what constitutes franchise fatigue to you? Is it the frequency of the releases or the longevity of the franchise? Is it, you know, like the lifespan of a series?
Well, as I said on Twitter, you basically you can't do the same thing again and again. I can't see Call of Duty outlasting this generation, to be honest, because they're not doing anything different. I mean, they tried something different with Black Ops 2, but it's not, they're not evolving enough, because people are going to say, oh, what's going to happen is people are going to buy these kinds of games that were launched with the system, maybe, and, you know, oh, so that's what you can do if you really put your head to it. Zombie U, for example. And, you know, you can't just, and also money helps, because if you, you know, if you're a franchise that's owned by Microsoft and they're a multi-billion-dollar company, then that always helps.
Yeah, marketing helps and being behind franchises help. But yeah, like you mentioned Call of Duty, I think Call of Duty is going to make it into the next gen, of course, obviously. But
it won't last long in there.
I don't think it's going to be the. I don't think it's going to be the hallmark where it is now. I don't think you're going to see games in that franchise selling 20 million anymore. Part of it, of course, will also be the transition into next gen when there isn't just, you know, there isn't 20 million consoles out there in the wild. But yeah, you know, I think, you know, so that, you know, that answers the other question, I guess, is that you also think that frequency is the bigger factor in franchise fatigue.
Well, yeah, because if you know, one a year is just too much. I mean,
well, I mean, because the reason I ask this, and I tend to agree with you, but you also see the argument made that it gets, you know, like, I've played this game for 25 years, I need something new, and I can understand that to a degree as well. It's like, you've kind of, you know, like, if this has been a hallmark in your life, it does kind of get old to kind of return, and, you know, it's like a safety food, you return to the same world, the same characters every 3 or 4 years. I can also see that contributing to you kind of getting tired or bored of a franchise.
I mean, Had XCOM been released, you know, maybe a year or two after the last XCOM, you know, the reaction to it wouldn't have been as it is now, because obviously the longer you go without something, the more you value it when it comes back.
That's actually a good point, because, you know, a lifespan is also dependent on what's actually happened during that life. You can, like, Zombie U, for example, is a sequel to a game that came out 25 years ago, but for all intents and purposes, most people count it as a new IP, because that's a huge gap in between that, and it's not really a franchise.
Yeah.
Kid Icarus Uprising, I would assume, would fall in the same thing. There's been two games almost 20 years ago. So while Kid Icarus isn't, you know, a sequel and Pit has kind of been around, it's like there's been a huge gap. You can't really say, like, oh, Kid Icarus is a boring IP because it's been around for 25 years, but there's only been three games in it.
Because I don't think I would have been as receptive to Borderlands 2 as I have been. You know, I've got 220 hours in it now.
Had it
been released a year after the original one. But because I had to wait 3 years to get it, you know, it also adds on to the fact that, you know, it's a very good game.
Yeah, I think, I mean, ideally, I think every 2 or 3 years for a sequel works better. I mean, you know, you kind of pushing it to 3 would be like 1, you know, like maybe 2 in a generation, where we're kind of, almost every game is either on a 1-year or 2-year cycle right now. So yeah, I, and, you know, kind of going back to the first question, I guess, is a lot of people also mentioned evolution, progress, change. Like one of the reasons why some franchises burn out is because they don't really evolve beyond the core format. And, you know, it's one of those things where, you know, we kind of had this discussion at the start of the podcast with DMC. It's like, DMC changes a lot that you expect from DMC, but because it changes, it does, you know, invite the franchise to evolve. And if not, they can go back to their format and kind of gain life out of that.
And, you know, and here we have me, who is a self-confessed Halo fanboy, and I hate Halo 4 because it's the same thing.
Yeah, I think, you know, Halo kind of is the opposite thing. I mean, it's kind of like, the reason Halo 1, 2, and 3 worked is because if you think about it, there were six years, three games, they came out every 3 years, you know, 2001, 2004, 2007.
Yeah.
And then Microsoft was like, okay, so we'll just kind of go Halo crazy. We've had a Halo every year since 2009 now.
Yeah, and I mean, admittedly, like we had an RTS, we had ODST, which was very different. And then we had Reach, which was, you know, a very traditional Halo experience. And then we had CE, which was, it was a remake of Halo 1. It was a very well done remake of Halo 1. So obviously people are going to buy that. But now we've gotten another one that's pretty much just you wrote Halo game. And, you know, it's just, I can't play it because it's just the same thing. I just see Halo Reach whenever I play Halo 4.
And that's a good point. It's like, but, you know, how much do you want it to change? Because, you know, like, I remember, especially with Halo, it's like, Halo Reach introduced the armor abilities, and people complained about that, and then Halo 4 introduced the loadouts, and people complained about that. You know, this is overpowered, that weapon's overpowered, this has been nerfed, I don't like this stage.
Look at ODST. That's the kind of sort of thing that I wanted again.
Yeah, but ODST pretty much just changed the single player format. The multiplayer was the same thing as
and
Halo
this is what I'm saying is Halo 4 does not change the single player at all.
And that's going to be a question to answer going into the next gen, because we have been seeing a shift towards multiplayer.
And this is what I was saying about, this is basically why I said that post on NeoGAF was true, is because what's happening is people just having franchises and sticking to the tropes of the franchise. And, you know, this generation, the transition from the PS2, the Xbox, the GameCube, the PS2 and the Xbox, to PS3 and Xbox 360, we saw no change in those franchises. You know, Halo didn't change, but we got them once every 3 years, so that's fine, until they started releasing them once a year, and now people are getting tired of them. I can't think of any other game. I mean, I can't think of many other kind of examples. But
Ratchet and Clank, I would put up there. But you know, Sony has been, the problem is Sony's been experimenting too much with that franchise, where it's lost its notoriety. And the other thing is, you know, this kind of goes back to it. It's like having a company that's behind you all the way. Like, you know, we've mentioned before that Sony as a first-party studio, you know, first-party publisher is a good thing. At the same time, they also kind of like, you know, like, we haven't had a new Jak and Daxter this year, this generation. We just got a Sly Cooper 4 next week, which they haven't advertised, and it's not even made by the original developers because they don't want to touch the franchise anymore.
I think Naughty Dog have it down. You make three games, you space them apart 2 to 3 years, and then you stop, and then you do something new.
I can understand that, and I think there is a certain point to this, and this is one of the things I mentioned when it was originally asked, and when I answered this question, one of the things I mentioned was that this is more in franchise longevity, in the fact that when you become something that's either character-driven, story-driven, mechanic-driven, that tends to wear out much faster than if you're just kind of... A prime example of this would be Gears of War. Gears of War had a trilogy set up, a 1, 2, and 3. It told a complete story, good or bad, whatever. It told that story, and now we get Judgment. It's like, really, do we need more Gears of War?
And this is it. It's when they're doing these fourth games, Halo 4, Gears of War, Judgment, basically they just make excuses to ignore the trilogy that, that was set up and finished, and it just annoys me that, you know, in Halo 4 they basically ignore everything that happens in Halo 1, 2, and 3 and ODST and Reach, and it's just like, so it's got Halo written on it, but you're just ignoring the fact that those games happened.
Yeah, it's kind of okay, compare it to something like Mario, where Mario has been around for nearly 30 years now, and there's no overarching story with Mario, there's no overarching plot. Like, as much as I have Mario, there's really not even much of a character there. But it continues to work because there is, you know, there's no open and close to the franchise. Yeah. There's no, like, and, oh, we've, you know, like, everybody jokes, oh, he's saving the princess again, but it works. Because
and
like
not to mention, is Mario's about, you don't get a new story, but you get a new experience. You know, because you play Super Mario 64, and you play Super Mario Sunshine, and you play Super Mario Galaxy, and they are by far not the same game.
Yeah, and you kind of, yeah, and it's, again, it's because it's just as more.
Yeah.
You can basically say that the Mario and Zelda, to the rest of the extent, are all played pretty much a template for a game that you just keep on repeating. So yeah, just to kind of rattle off, I have no idea where Chad is right now. Just to kind of ride off.
Burritos.
Oh, greasy food soaks up the alcohol.
Believe me, no one knows that better than I.
It's why my Saturday morning breakfast is always bacon.
Well, yeah, fucking Final Fantasy. Like, every game is completely self-sustaining. I mean, there's a few exceptions to that rule.
And the only time we get tired of it is when they do 13, 13, 2, 13, 4.
Yeah, and I was about to say that. Yeah, exactly. That they could, because, like, Final Fantasy, I don't have the exact figures, but I assume Final Fantasy have, well, not I haven't, but 12 sell better than 13, 10, 2. And I assume Final Fantasy 15 will sell better than X, 13, 2, and 13.
I was going to say, if you're going to say 14, I can name at least one game that will sell better than 14.
That's why I skipped over 14, and it's also why I skipped over 11, because they are different in, you know, design.
Yeah.
But fact is, like, every Final Fantasy, like, again, it's like, even if Final Fantasy 13 is terrible and people hate it or whatever, Final Fantasy 15 gives them a whole new time to start over, because it's not like you have to be dependent on the story that came before or the characters or anything like that. It's a whole new start for them. And that's why the franchise has existed for nearly 30 years as well. And stuff like that. And again, we've seen RPG franchises that have come and gone since Final Fantasy. And for one reason or another, they haven't caught on. But yeah, to write off some of the responses we got for the first question about franchise longevity, this comes from Electrovirus. Great gameplay, a reasonable reschedule, and a clear distinction between main and spin-off titles, among others. I think that's actually a fair point that we didn't bring up, because a lot of franchises do spin out into other things. And
well, Halo, you know, you could say Halo Reach is a spin-off, but it's not.
No, well, but the Halo Wars is a spin-off.
Well, technically it's not. Technically it's, you know, they took...
Well, I mean, like, it's a spin-off in the sense that it's not the core Halo format. And, you know, that's always the problem. It's the same way that, you know, some people get annoyed when I say this, but, like, whenever somebody says, like, Nintendo whores out Mario, always make the distinction between the fact that they whore out the character of Mario, not the franchise of Mario.
Yeah.
Because they don't do 3D and 2D platformers every year. But Mario is in, like, 50 games a year. And I think that's a very, you know, that's a huge difference, I think. It's the same thing, like, if, you know, if Master Chief was in other stuff, it wouldn't be so bad. But if everything he's in is like a Halo Golf, a Halo Tennis, a Halo, it kind of gets old fast. Let's see. I say number one is the characters, then story, then gameplay. You get Sonic is always running, but people love him. See, I would reverse that, because Sonic's all about the gameplay. It doesn't, as much as Sonic tries to be story heavy, they don't really have an.
People love Sonic. Like,
people do
there's
Sonic.
A difference between people loving Sonic and Sonic having a rabid fan base.
Oh, even generations and colors have sold, what, 2.5-3 million copies? So
well, that's those are the best recent Sonic games, like, in a decade.
Yeah. Like, when you, and this is what we come, like, frequency, you know, we've, like, people have gone, oh, that's a shit Sonic game, don't buy it, it's a shit Sonic game, don't buy it, it's a shit Sonic game, go, don't buy it. And the minute we get a good one, people go and buy it.
Yeah, but the thing is, people buy the bad ones, too. And the franchise...
Yeah, but that's only really the rabid fan base, or kids,
yeah,
don't
fuck
know
those guys.
Anymore.
And again, that's a huge part of it, though. You want that, you know, like, you need people behind you. Like, you can be a popular franchise. Like, honestly speaking, I don't see people crying if Call of Duty goes missing next year. It, there's nothing that attaches people to that franchise. People enjoy it because they play it with their friends. But the minute another major first-person shooter comes out that gives them what they need, Call of Duty is yesterday's news. Like, there's nothing that... like, I mean, I don't pay them enough to know. Maybe there is something that I'm missing. Maybe there... but it doesn't seem to have enough character or story there. It just seems to be like you killing people. And the moment something comes that can replace that as well as Call of Duty, Call of Duty's dead. What else do we have? Multiple games in a year are a risk, though I suppose keeping them separate platforms can migrate that. I think this is a... this only happens with a handful of franchises. I think Mario's up there, and I think Guitar Hero and Rock Band suffered from this as well, where they've had multiple releases in the same calendar year. And that's, you know, that's, again, that's kind of the same thing, where, like, one, you don't give people enough time to buy the original, and the second thing is it just kind of, it's overkill.
Yeah. I mean, I mean, you don't even need to talk about titles, really. I get put off when I see, you know, Call of Duty Black Ops 2 for £40, and then I get to see Call of Duty Black Ops 2 Season Pass for £35.
Yeah.
Or whenever I look at the DLC list for Saints Row 3 or Sleeping Dogs or pretty much any game nowadays, you know, is so long on Steam, and when the total cost of the DLC comes to more than the game itself, it just
I'm kind of curious. Do you think that DLC helps build a franchise or helps kill it?
Because it depends on how you do it. Because let's compare Borderlands 2, for example, with Sleeping Dogs, right? With Sleeping Dogs, I mean, with either franchise, we're not seeing an effect on the games really through the DLC, regardless of how the quality or what they actually are. But if I was to look at Sleeping Dogs, not already owning it, and see, oh, there's a bunch of skin packs, I won't bother. But if I see, you know, you get a whole new character class for Borderlands 2, you get 3 campaign expansions, you know, you get some cosmetics if you want it, you know, that's fine. Because at least there's some meaty content that gives me more of the game and not just, oh, way looks different now.
And this is kind of what I was getting at, and this is what I'm curious about. It's like,
and if you Call of Duty is different, I would say Call of Duty puts me off because the DLC is notoriously overpriced anyway.
Well, I mean, even without the price, I'm just thinking more along the lines of like we've kind of, like, DLC has kind of helped or hurt, whatever you want to look at it, kind of the notion of a sequel. Like, you don't want a sequel that is basically an expansion pack, or, you know, just like, you know, like, why couldn't this have been DLC and stuff like that? So, like, I'm thinking, like, does it hurt franchises in the long run? Because, like, you can't, you know, like, a good example would be Mega Man. Like, if Mega Man was a franchise that came out this generation, would we have accepted Mega Man 2 and 3 and 4 if all you're doing is giving us new robot boss masks?
Well, the thing is, it depends. It depends on a number of things. How much the game costs, you know, what you're doing with your DLC in the first place. If you're just doing expansions, fine. You know, you recognize that you don't need to release a whole new game. You can just do an expansion for it.
Yeah. Yeah, but I think that's still something developers are working on, and I think that's something that fans are still kind of, you know, kind of coming to grips with, because it's, again, and this is.
Well, I think that in the long run, if you see a massive list of DLC, you're going to be put off the game, because you're not really going to go, oh, but they could be expansion packs or whatever. If you see a big list, yeah, I know I've done it before. I saw a big list of DLC when I looked at the pace for Dungeon Defenders on Steam. I was like, no. I don't care what it is. No.
That's interesting. I think this is something we should have examined more. But yeah, we're really over the hour mark, and I don't.
Because you're not. Because there's no brevity. It's just like, let's throw out a new thing every two weeks or so.
Yeah, what I'm talking about, what I'm thinking is, like, you have that, but compound that with the fact that if you're a sequel, it's like you're, you know, like, the game's never gone. And I, you know, from a developer publisher standpoint, I kind of get that you kind of always want in the conversation. The problem is, if you're always in the conversation, nobody can miss you.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like, oh, we're on Call of Duty again? people haven't stopped talking about Modern Warfare 3 yet, and you know, here's Black Ops 2. Oh, here's Black Ops 2 map pack. Oh, they're going to reveal the next Call of Duty in May. Okay. So it's kind of like, at some point, it's just like, you keep on hearing about this franchise, you keep on seeing it. It's everywhere, and like, after a while, it does that stagnate growth for certain franchises, where it's like, you know, like, it needs to, you know, like, XCOM, like you mentioned before, was a franchise that was dormant, but if XCOM was releasing, like, map packs every 3 months or something like that, would the reception for a new one have been as grandiose?
Well, no.
And then that's what I'm trying to get at. It's like, does DLC help with that or hurt with it? Because, like, you know, like, it's great that games can extend beyond their initial release, but at the same time, it's like games are extended beyond their initial release, and then we turn around and there's a sequel, and it's like, why couldn't this have been DLC? Yeah. Why couldn't this have been a map pack? Why couldn't this have been an expansion? I would have paid $20 for it, not $60 or something like that. And I think, again, that goes into franchises. You know, it's frequency. Like, if it comes out, if it's
this take Borderlands 2 again, right? So we've got campaign expansions releasing fairly often, but we can be pretty much sure that we're not going to see another Borderlands game for a while, because it took.
We won't see another one this generation.
Yeah, you know, it took 3 years between Borderlands 1 and 2. Whereas Call of Duty, I'm not going to buy Call of Duty DLC, because I'm going to buy £35 worth of DLC in the season pass. And then by the time, like only a couple of months after the last DLC comes out, the whole game is going to be everything. The whole game and all £75 that I've spent on it is going to be obsolete because the new one's out. So it's about the frequency of the games. If you properly manage the frequency of your DLC in your games, you can mitigate that quite easily. But obviously, people like Activision don't have to do that, so they don't.
Yeah. Yeah, it's, you know, it's one of those things. But like I said, we'll kind of pick this up later on, or maybe next week or something like that. I want to wrap because it's over an hour, and we're trying to keep this within an hour now. So, yeah, you know, check us out on the website. We'll have articles and reviews and other fun stuff with the games. We'll be back next week with episode 99. So for Daniel, Chad, and myself, this has been Dual World in episode 98.